Good morning, folks. I'm Roland Martin, broadcasting live in New York City. Next on News One Now, new rape allegations against Russell Simmons. Shocking allegations, claims that he actually raped several women. He denies that content as well. Tavis Smiley, his show has been suspended by PBS in the midst of a sexual harassment allegation as well. He also speaks out on a Facebook post. We'll share that with you as well. Also, Republicans in the House moving forward with their tax bill. They have agreed with the United States Senate on that particular tax bill. Also, in this hour, we'll continue talking about the stunning upset of Doug Jones there in Alabama. Why Mitch McConnell is trying to hurry up and get the tax bill done before Doug Jones arrives in Washington. Also, our News One Now cameras were in Houston talking to survivors of Hurricane Harvey. We'll have that for you as well. Omarosa is out at the White House. And our final What the Hell Thursday before our show goes off the air a week from today. It's time to bring the funk. News One Now on TV One. All right, folks, glad to have you here. I'm, of course, in New York, where last night Harry Belafonte was honored by the Robert Kennedy Human Rights Gala. And so I had a good time there as well. While I was there, phone began to blow up, folks, with news of two African-Americans caught up in sexual harassment allegations. PBS talk show host Tavis Smiley has been suspended over sexual misconduct allegations involving staffers that surfaced Wednesday. The New York Times is reporting hip-hop mogul Russell Simmons facing more rape allegations by three women. Talk about a stunning story. We already knew, of course, about Russell Simmons. That was a previous story done about him where the granddaughter of Lena Horne alleged that Russell Simmons had raped him. Now, three more women have stepped forward in this New York Times story. Also, in the Los Angeles Times, they also have a story out with regards to allegations against him as well. So we will get to all of that in our next segment. But first, Senate Democrats want Republicans to delay a vote on the tax overhaul bill until Alabama Senator Doug Jones officially gets seated. But Republicans say they want a vote as early as next week. Let's talk about that right now, of course, with our panel as well. Let me introduce who is in the studio. First and foremost, Scott Bolden is in the house. Scott, how you doing?
Good, real good, Roland.
All right, then, of course, Julianne Malvo, she's in the house as well.
Good morning, Roland.
All right, then, and is my man Lenny there? So I have wrong information here as well. And of course, we have Derek Holly here as well. Derek, how you doing?
I'm good, Roland. How you doing?
All right, first, folks, let's get to, again, all of the drama when it comes to sexual harassment and these allegations. First and foremost, PBS, again, has taken Tavis Smiley's show off of the air due to an investigation. They say he has, of course, jeopardized the standards of PBS. Tavis Smiley, last night, though, spoke out on Facebook addressing these claims. All right, then. So we don't have the sound of Tavis's statement? All right, folks, in that Facebook posting, okay, here we go. Here's Tavis Smiley speaking out.
Hi, I'm Tavis. I was as shocked as you were to hear of PBS's sudden announcement regarding my television program. Let me say at the outset that I have the utmost respect for all women, and I certainly celebrate the courage of those women who've come forth of late to share their own truth. But let me also assure you that I have never groped, inappropriately exposed myself, or coerced any colleague in the workplace ever in my 30-year career. PBS launched this so-called investigation of me without ever even telling me about it. I only learned of this investigation because former colleagues, former staffers, started to call me to tell me they were getting a phone call from some PBS investigator asking, number one, did Tavis ever make you feel uncomfortable in the workplace? And number two, can you give us other persons to call? Only after threatening a lawsuit did PBS investigators agree to sit down and talk to me for 3 hours. And even then, their minds must have been made up, because almost immediately after that session ended, this story broke in Variety. PBS investigators refused to look at any of my documentation, refused to talk to any of my current staffers, refused to give me the names of any of my accusers, and refused to give me any semblance of due process. It is clear that this has gone too far, and I, for one, intend to fight back. PBS overreacted, and they launched a sloppy investigation. It's time for a real conversation in this country about where the lines are, about how men and women can engage each other in the workplace. And I look forward to actively participating in that conversation.
Again, that was a video posted last night by Tavis on his Facebook page. Now, according to Variety, who first broke this news, as you heard him say, the veteran journalist media personality engaged in sexual relationships with multiple subordinates who felt their employment was linked to having sex with him. They say the working environment was verbally abusive and threatening. Many feared retaliation. In February, a former producer for the show published a piece in The Observer describing an environment filled with misogynistic behavior and womanizing. Now, PBS, again, is halting distribution of the show. And again, Smiley is speaking out on this as well. This comes just weeks after PBS show host Charlie Rose was fired over sexual misconduct charges. Also, several other PBS personalities in New York. One resigned, a couple of others were let go as well, and plus Garrison Keillor, of course, a PBS host for a number of years, was let go in Minnesota as a result of sexual harassment allegations. Also, Russell Simmons facing more drama, more rape allegations. The New York Times is reporting that three women all came on the record saying that they were raped by Simmons in incidents dating back to the late 1980s. Los Angeles Times is also reporting accounts from five more women on the record who allege Simmons raped them in the 1980s. Simmons is denying all of these accusations. In a statement, this is what he said. I vehemently deny all these allegations. These horrific accusations have shocked me to my core, and all of my relations have been consensual. Now, remember, in November, Simmons announced that he was stepping down from his companies after writer Jenny Lumet, of course, she is the granddaughter of Lena Horne, alleged that he sexually assaulted her in 1991. In addition to our panelists, joining us in D.C. is Torin Ellis, diversity strategist and author of Rip the Resume. First and foremost, let's go to all of the folks on our panel. We'll deal with both of these, and that is, when you look at these allegations, Torin, against Tavis Smiley, he says that he did not, that the investigation was given to Variety shortly after his interview ended. They are saying, other allegations saying that he had sexual relations with employees. Is that separate or different than sexual harassment, engaging in sexual relations with staffers?
The short answer is, Roland, yes, it is. In an environment where you you create a hostile work environment, if you feel obligated to have sex, or that's par for course, then yes, it's a hostile environment. And what these men are saying and what Tavis is saying about the investigation, that's pretty normal or how an investigation takes place. Now, I don't know whether it's sloppy or not. He may not like how they did it, but an investigation isn't really about defending yourself. But if you have sexual relations with women and subordinates, inherent in that sexual relationship is power, which is at the base.
Hold, the other piece of those.
Hold on one second. Hold up one second. I need everybody to settle down. Scott finished.
Just got started.
Scott finished. I'm going to Torin, then I'm going to Julian. Go ahead.
At the base, of all of this is power. And if you're having sex with subordinates, whether it's said or not, you may think it's consensual, but it certainly isn't if they feel that they're compelled to do this because this is par for course. So PBS can suspend you whether it was consensual or not, whether you couch it in harassment or not. It's fundamentally wrong and has no place in the workplace.
It doesn't have any place. It has absolutely no place in the workplace. And like Tavis said in an article on December 1st, he said history is littered with philosophical truth tellers that unfortunately we will know and appreciate far too late. And so in this particular case, you know, for Tavis and for Russell and for so many others, they just have to go through the process. They have to deal with exactly what's been put in front of them, and they have to make sure that they are truthful. They need to come forward and make sure that they can address these situations and do that in a timely manner.
But even if this is
Julian,
even if this is consensual sex in the workplace, it still is inappropriate because of the fact that it has an impact on the other people in the workplace. In other words, if you have seven subordinates and you're having consensual sex with one, others know about it. What is the impact of that on their workplace relationships?
It's never consensual in the workplace. It's never consensual
well,
in
Scott,
the workplace.
Well, Scott, I'm talking.
A power vacuum.
I'm talking, Scott, and I agree with you. I do agree with you. However, I do not agree with you interrupting me.
Here's the deal, though. First of all, Scott, you say it's not consensual. First of all, two adults can have a consensual relationship in the workplace, but when you are a superior, when you are the CEO of a company, that changes things because, as Julian said, Derek, the reality is someone could say, oh, you're giving this person a raise, you're giving this person a promotion as a result of your relationship, you're giving them more assignments, which could allow for upper mobility, and that's right. What you're dealing with here.
Exactly. Derek? I agree with you, and the thing is you can't do that in the military either. You know, ranking officers can't mess with lower ranking. It's fraternizing. And it's the same thing in the workplace. Right. So the bottom line is you can't do it. And it's gotten out of control. But I do agree with you, Roland. You can have, two adults can have, have agreed to having a relationship in the workplace.
But it's not a good idea.
It's not a good idea.
But Scott, one second. I need everybody to breathe.
Roland, you need to be in the studio today.
I know y'all get a little extra that I'm in New York, but breathe.
No.
Scott's out of control.
Second of all, one second.
Okay.
1 second. Scott, let's deal with this. And Scott, then Torin, your superior. But here's the other piece. PBS distributed the show. Mm-hmm. PBS did not pay for any of the production. It was all done through Tavis's production company.
Right.
And so the question then becomes, if they're distributing the show, what oversight do they actually have if this is his production company, his staff, he's paying the people.
Their airways.
What's their role in this?
Well, you have to look at their contract, but I'm sure they have standards in that contract. That is the distribution contract. And if you look at that, it will have standards in there that, notwithstanding the fact that they don't produce the show, that to publicize it, to distribute it, they have their standards that their contractors like Travis have to meet. And so they have every right to investigate. They have every right to say, no, we don't want to distribute a show where the host and the CEO of that show engages in sexual relationships with subordinates that could amount to harassment. Because watch this. If someone sues Tavis Smiley, they could also include PBS.
That's right.
And that's a risk factor for PBS that they can't ignore. And so, sure, whether they get dismissed from the lawsuit or not is a whole other story, but they certainly have opened themselves up.
Torin, when you look at some of the allegations also against Russell Simmons at his yoga facility in Los Angeles, plus in the New York Times story, these were employees. You had two women who say they were artists with the label who alleged that he sexually assaulted them, raped them. And then you have the woman in L.A. who was a manager of his yoga studio who talked about how he sexually harassed women there as well. So what you're dealing with here, you're dealing with individuals, again, subordinates in the workplace.
Yeah, well, one thing that Scott said that I want to touch on, you know, from a social responsibility and a branding standpoint, you have the decision for PBS to delay distribution, and it makes sense. And you know what Tavis has to understand is that he may also lose sponsors through this particular issue, and so that is a very big deal, if you will. And as it relates to Russell, I read an article that says up to 9 women right now are accusing him of some sort of impropriety. And unfortunately for him, when these allegations are as recent as February of 2017, he's got a problem on his hand. And so you can't necessarily rely on the Uncle Rush stance and posture when you've been this individual now, when you've been an individual for the last 20, 25 years. He's got a lot of reckoning that he's got to deal with.
You know, this Roland.
Julian, to the point, the question I raise, and that is, again, in the case of Russell Simmons, where 2 women were artists, and he was a person responsible for their careers. One of the women who alleges that he raped her said he was her manager. Then you have, of course, the yoga studio in Los Angeles. I mean, again, this is a case where an individual has control over the careers of individuals underneath them. Julian, go ahead.
You know, that's why this is about power. It's not really about sex. Everybody's got, you know, get the salacious notion of sex in there, but it really is about power. I can do this to you. It's like what Selma Hayek has said very recently about Harvey Weinstein. I can do this to you because in a capitalist patriarchy, implicitly what is being said is I own you. So, and many men, not all men, but many men feel that way when they're in positions of power. What we're seeing now, Roland, is a sea change in the way we're looking at these things. These are things we used to wink and nod at. Just about every woman has a story she can tell about some form of harassment or inappropriate comment or something like that. In my generation, we learned just to laugh it off. I mean, just, you know, some fool says something, you know, go away, dude. And a lot of women didn't feel that they could do that. But those of us who felt empowered, you know, you cuss somebody out. You tell them, don't put your hand on me again
you
or something.
Curse them out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time. But the point is that, but we winked and nodded at it. We didn't ever think of, let me report this to HR or anything because it was just so usual. But now sisters are coming up, women are coming up and saying, this is not usual. It's inappropriate. It diminished me in the workplace. It may have hurt my career, like the woman who basically said she can't find a job in Washington because she complained against a Fahrenheit, the Texas congressman. So, you know, we're seeing the sea change, and it's an important sea change. But one of the things that Tavis said that we really need to pay attention to is there are nuances. And there are lines that we need to draw. He had no business. If he had sex with an employee, he had no business doing it. But at the same time, what happens when I decide that I'm going to hit on Scott? Well, I wouldn't do that.
Oh, all right.
Right there on the air, Roland. She said it right on the air. You saw it.
Folks, I have got to go to a break. Torin, we appreciate it. Thank you so very much for joining us. Democrats are not the only ones celebrating Doug Jones winning in Alabama. We'll explain that next. News 1 Now on TV 1. All right, folks, Democrats are not the only ones celebrating Doug Jones beating Roy Moore. So are Republicans. Last thing they wanted was an alleged pedophile in their midst in the United States Senate. And so, frankly, they are a little happy that Doug Jones was able to beat Roy Moore.
Sorry, I know that I'm supposed to only cheer for people on my side of the aisle, but I thought the people of Alabama did a great thing for our country last night.
What message did the election send last night?
Alabama's didn't want somebody who dated 14-year-old girls.
This is not about a rebuke of Republican ideas. This isn't a rebuke of conservative values or agendas. This is a rebuke of a candidate.
Doug Jones, of course, the first Democrat in more than 2 decades to flip Alabama's Senate seat in the deeply red state. And, of course, black voters, they were the ones who actually made the difference. Yesterday, Doug Jones rejected claims that he took black votes for granted.
We knocked on 300,000 doors. We rang 1.2 million phones across this state. We knew what we were doing. We knew the importance of minority votes, and we reached out. So, and I think they responded. But I also believe this. I think we had a lot of support from the leadership in the African American community. Those leaders knew me.
All right, let's go back to our panel here. Derek Holly, Julian Malvo, and Scott Bolden. Derek, I'll start with you.
Sure.
And look, I mean, I understand Look, Doug Jones, defending himself against these claims. But the reality is, in talking to African Americans who were in Alabama, they felt the campaign was not doing enough. And folks began to mobilize among themselves. And so at the end of the day, African Americans are right. If you want those black votes to turn out, you have to start early and not late.
It's unfortunate we have this conversation every election. Mm-hmm. And in both parties, especially the Democratic Party, they take for granted the black vote. And that's the reason why Hillary Clinton lost, because she did take it. She completely neglected the black vote in several of the states that she figured that she was going to win just because Barack Obama dominated in those states. So,
but Darren, let me remind you, she also neglected white folks in Wisconsin by not even going to the state, in Michigan and Pennsylvania as well, folks. So Robbie Mook, Marlon Marshall, and all of them, they ran a horrible campaign because folks were on the ground, black and white, were trying to explain to them that your models are not the truth. They were just sitting here stuck in their iPads saying, sure. No, but this is what this says.
Right, and it's unfortunate.
This is what this says.
And it's unfortunate that they wait to the last minute to spend money to try to attract black voters. And it's always the case.
Julianne.
And this is just
Julianne,
what this is.
Julianne, just, Julianne, yes, one second. Republicans, Julianne, are so happy today because none of them wanted even a photo of Roy Moore in the hallways of the U.S. Senate. Donald Trump may have, but U.S. senators said, "Ooh, thank the Lord he didn't win."
Yeah.
All of them are rolling. You know, Mitch McConnell is relieved. Every single one of them, because they were going to have to sit next to this guy. They were going to have to assign him to committees or not.
Sure.
Do an investigation or not. But, you know, back to your previous point. Doug Jones, my question is he going to answer Terry Sewell's phone call when she calls him to ask him to do something? Because she's the sister, the congresswoman from Alabama who went hither to Don. Is he going to respond to Charles Barkley? Is he going to respond to Cory Booker?
Right.
You know,
the people came down to help her.
You know, when you look at the charts, 94% of black men, 98% of black women voted for him. You know, the white moms, of course, they didn't want the pedophile there, but white men still stayed with him. And so what these folks do not understand, number one, you spend your money early, you spend it on our media, our press. Don't expect that we're going to get it through the grapevine. Don't just come to my church, take out an ad in something. And that's what Hillary didn't do. She believed that we all were so in love with her that we were just going to vote for her, money or no money.
Yeah, I think the real lesson here, real quick, Roland, is that this is a coalition building process. I hear about the black women and black men. The idea there was they got out and voted and they mobilized, whether it was Doug Jones or whoever was motivating them. But you cannot forget about the young people that got motivated to vote, as well as the suburban moms, independents, and intellectual people, white folks in those suburbs who Doug Jones hit deep into that voting market that would normally probably have gone for this candidate. This was an awful candidate,
sure.
But I also think that the Democrats learned a lot by maybe this is the coalition going forward. It worked in Virginia, it worked in Alabama, but you got to stay focused. You celebrate for one day and get back on the ground because 2018 is coming.
All right, let's talk about the tax bill. Republicans are hoping, of course, to pass the bill no later than next week once the House and Senate versions are merged, what Donald Trump is calling a Christmas present. Well, a Merry Christmas present to Americans.
That's not a present. That's like an icicle in your Christmas stocking or a piece of coal.
Wait for Doug
Jones. All right, one second. All right, guys, we got sound here.
Today, we Senate Democrats are calling on Mitch McConnell to hit pause on his tax bill and not hold a final vote until Doug Jones is sworn into the Senate. It would be wrong for Senate Republicans to jam through this tax bill without giving the newly elected senator from Alabama the opportunity to cast his vote.
Now we're just days away. I hope, you know what that means, right? From keeping that promise and delivering a truly amazing victory for American families. We want to give you, the American people, a giant tax cut for Christmas. And when I say giant, I mean giant.
Yeah, but analysis of that tax bill says it favors corporations and the wealthy and would result in tax increases for some low-income Americans. Lower tax rates for individuals will expire in 8 years, while those for corporations are permanent. The individual mandate for the Affordable Care Act is also repealed in the bill, which will lead to 13 million more Americans losing their health insurance. Derek, they're selling this as great for Americans.
Sure.
But if you're corporations, you're the one who's really smiling.
Yeah, Roland.
And I thought Republicans didn't like debt. This is going to add $1.5 trillion to the debt. Derek?
Roland, there are some good points in this bill. I actually had the opportunity to speak to someone from Mitch McConnell's office as recent as yesterday. They are in conference right now. They expect to have this finished and completed by the end of the week. Like the tax credit for individuals who have children in the house under the age of 17. Well, that tax credit now goes from $1,000 to $2,000 per child. And at the end of the day, when you look at all in history, you can read articles right now to talk about how bad this plan is or how good it is. But at the end of the day,
my question was very simple. Republicans have always talked about the debt. That's all we heard during 8 years of Obama. Debt. National debt. This tax bill is going to add $1.5 trillion to the national debt. What happened to fiscal conservatives?
This tax bill will also, and history has proven it, that it will bolster the economy. It happened when... Would happen.
What does that have to do with the debt, though? $1.5
trillion is blowing up. If it's going to bolster the economy, it worked for Kennedy and it worked for Reaganomics.
No, it did not work for Reaganomics. Here's the thinking. This is what you call a serious crapshoot. The thinking is this: if you put money,
do we leave it as it is?
You know
what?
Here's the deal. Here's the deal in the short run. They do this cut. The only thing they've been consistent on is cuts to corporations. The crapshoot is this: you give corporations money, they're going to invest, they're going to hire more people. But you've already heard some corporations say, no, what we're going to do is a stock buyback. We're going to buy back our stock so our CEOs get more money. They're not saying anything. I have not heard one corporation say, I'm going to take my money and hire more people. I'm going to spend more money on per heavy equipment.
How
and then this nonsense
that
you said, how do you know it? That's what I'm saying.
Here's
the deal, real quick. This is the Republican plan, though, and your viewership can't be fooled by this. They're going to blow a hole in the budget, and they're going to have this $1.5 trillion gap. Then what they're going to do is they're going to moan and groan to say, hey, the deficit is eating us up. They're going to give tax breaks to the rich. And then what they're going to do is they're going to come back and say, we have to cut entitlements because we've got to close
precisely.
The $1.5 trillion.
So this is step one and two before they get to step three.
And Paul Ryan has already said it.
One second. We will find out next week if this pass is coming up. Our cameras were in Houston talking to Hurricane Harvey survivors. We'll tell you what they are dealing with there when we come back. News 1 Now, TV 1. All right, folks, as my hometown of Houston continues recovering from the devastation of Hurricane Harvey, we, of course, were there over the weekend with the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation. Our cameras visited the Urban One radio stations there in Houston to talk with some of the folks who worked there about what they had to deal with to going through that devastation.
The initial phase is you have to try to survive. So the first two, maybe 24, 48 hours, I think everybody's in survival mode trying to see what's going to happen. As the days start to progress and things don't look like they're getting better, you know, people start to seek out the radio station to get information. And whenever there's something happening in the community, I don't know why. I think it was the way I was brought up in radio, maybe community and, you know, being Black maybe even, that you feel like I have to do something. I want to be that voice, that comfortable voice that they've heard for a lot of years, telling them this is going to be okay, that's going to be okay, and actually directing them with information. Okay, this is happening here, that's happening there. You know, when stores started to open up again, people were looking for food. And we literally got on the radio, hey, if y'all open, you got a food spot, let us know so we can direct people over there. We were telling people to go to certain places to get food because they've been cooped up in homes for so long. And they were looking for some warm food, some fast food or whatever it was, or looking for groceries. Was the K Roger open? You know, all these kind of things. And they were looking for that information. And I don't know, I just feel like I wanted to be that voice. My team wanted to be that voice that they heard, that settling voice that they heard when these things were happening, to let them know, hey man, things are bad, but we're gonna be okay. We're fighting city, we're fighting town, we're gonna be okay.
This is something that's going to be devastating for, you know, it's gonna be devastating for a minute and could be into the billions of dollars for our city to recover.
Here's the funny thing, I was here for 24 hours straight, then I decided, oh, you know what, let me make sure I got two little girls. Let me make sure I got them. And then I found a hotel that was down the street, so I dumped them off. Actually brought them here with me for a little while. Actually, when it first started happening, I lied. I had them here for a little while, called around, found out there was a hotel down the street that, you know, still had a couple of openings. I said, hey, let me go put y'all over here. I'm gonna come back over here and finish my job. So family was okay. Water got a little high in my neighborhood, but yeah, it was strange. A lot of, you know, the staff stuck around, our bosses stuck around. You know, a lot of times this is where you see people bail out a little bit, but it's comforting to see that your bosses, they're in the trenches with you. You know, your coworkers, they're in the trenches with you. I don't care if you're full-time, part-time, everybody wanted to be a part this collaborative effort, if you will, to try to help the community. And we took different shifts. Somebody might fall out for 3 hours and get back up, and you go take your nap for a little bit, and we just took shifts. When somebody fell out and just couldn't, I can't take no more. You know, we just help, all right, you out, or they, you know, start talking deliriously on the air. Hey man, there's a sandwich back there. Won't you go get that sandwich, relax for a couple of minutes, and we take that. And you know, a guy be knocked out for the next 5 hours because he had been up for the last 15, 20 hours. It started getting like that near the end when everybody is starting to come up for air. And you know, you got certain communities to start to call you and say, hey man, we don't got no electricity over here. Hey man, there actually was a couple of people we helped to save. Like, there's some old guy that can't get out of his house, he's over here. So we would go on Facebook and we would hit this person because he just called and told me, because he heard me on the air talking, that he had somebody that worked at EMS that worked for this person. And so we'll be on Facebook connecting to this person that would connect to that person that would call out to somebody else that would get them over there. So it was interesting how all these things were working. Social media, the radio, and everybody kind of working in unison to, you know, help each other. And to me, that's the biggest thing I took out of all this. It was amazing to see, you know, officers say, hey, when you see a man down, assist. You know, that was saying, don't wait on us because we don't know what's happening here. We may not be able to get to you in time. If you can help your neighbor, go out there and help your neighbor. And that's the most miraculous thing I've taken out of all this, to see everyone, no creed, age, color, everybody coming together and trying to help one another the way that it should be every single day.
What's up, everybody? Hope everybody's safe. Just want to let y'all know, me and my family, we safe. We got out. Our neighborhood was flooded up to chest high, but luckily we got out. We're in front of this Dollar General. It started raining, I believe, around a Monday. Throughout the week, I had a cousin that kept calling me, telling me, you know, what, because I stayed with my mom and my dad, what were we going to do? Were we going to stay there? Were we going to ride it out? And he was so worried because in 2001, it was a tropical storm, Allison, and we had got flooded. And we had got like 8 feet of water. So, you know, even though it was so long ago, a lot of my family was still worried about that. I kept watching the news and everything was getting so intense that I knew I couldn't go to sleep at night. So what I did, I started taking 2-hour naps with a timer, and I would wake up every 2 hours. I would go outside, look at the street because it was raining, it was pouring, and I would watch the news for 20 minutes. And every time I would wake up, the news kept getting worse and worse and worse. Within 20 minutes of me waking up everyone, the water started getting in the house. And once it started getting in, I looked at the clock, it was 7:02. From 7:02 to 7:20, it was like someone just opened a water faucet, because the levees were breaking, the rivers were outflowing. There was a river by my house. So I'm not even kidding, like in 15 minutes, water went from nowhere to chest high in the house. Through social media and everything, everyone was giving out numbers of, you know, places to call. So I called like the City of Houston information hotline. And I told the lady, hey, you know, our neighborhood's flooding. You know, what's going on in the city? What's gonna happen? And in the most professional way that she could I'll never forget this. She told me there's no one's gonna come. So we had to walk probably like 8 blocks in the water. And as we're walking, it's like everyone had got the memo at the same time in my neighborhood, because it was like a line. Just, it looked like hundreds of people from the neighborhood just trying to get out. As we're walking, everyone kind of stopped because someone in the front couldn't walk anymore. So everyone's just kind of looking around, seeing what to do. And some man opened his door and he was like, "Are you guys trying to get out?" And everyone was like, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, come through my house, because his backyard goes higher, so the water gets lower." So this man had opened his house and hundreds of people were going through his house. My only worry was, we need to get out of the neighborhood. And by this time, I lost track of time. I can't even tell you what time it was. So I did the only thing I knew how to do, because I work here and we're so media tech savvy. I did a video on Instagram. It's about maybe 20, 30 families out here with us. We're just trying to get a hold of the Red Cross, find some shelter. So if anybody knows anyone, or you know, a phone number we can call, I've been calling, no one answers. We're on Mesa and Green River, the Dollar General. There's no water up here. We're safe on high ground. For anything, I got my phone. Y'all text me, but we good, we safe. Y'all stay safe too. I kept seeing a few of the DJs from up here, especially GT Man. He kept posting addresses of people who needed rescue, and then he would post that they were saved. So as I'm looking at that, I kind of just see someone who I know who had posted, and then his post helped them get rescued. You know, I keep seeing people need help. Maybe if I start posting some stuff, some people will go that way.
You know, you try to entertain and make them laugh and feel this and feel that and inform them and give them the information and play music, of course. But sometimes you do your job and you know that it's important and you know it's impactful. And like I said before, I wanted to make sure that they heard this voice that they've heard for a while on the radio, saying repeatedly, it's going to be okay, we're going to make it through, here's some information that you need, here's what we need to do next. You know, sometimes when we watch the news, we watch these stories, and we're totally unconnected to the story because it's not affecting us. We're just sitting at home like, oh, too bad for them. It's different when you go in these neighborhoods and you see the devastation that's happened to these people.
All right, folks, when we come back, Omarosa gone from the White House. Next, News 1 Now TV 1. Omarosa Manigault Newman out at the White House. She says she resigned effective January 20th, her one-year anniversary. The reports say she was fired by General John Kelly, chief of staff, and escorted off of the premises. This all started when White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders told reporters Omarosa had resigned from her position as Director of Communications for the White House Office of Public Liaison on Wednesday, and that her last day would be January 20th. But journalist April Ryan with American Urban Radio Networks tweeted, quote, sources say General Kelly did the firing. Omarosa is alleged to have acted very vulgar and cursed a lot and said she helped elect President Trump. Of course, the word is General Kelly had it and got rid of her. Now, Ryan went on to tweet, according to multiple sources, Omarosa did not resign. She was even escorted out of the building and off campus. The White House immediately responded, accusing Ryan of having a personal vendetta against Omarosa and kept emphasizing that she resigned. Ryan responded again, okay, the White House still contends Omarosa signed a resignation letter, but General Kelly kicked her out with high drama, with the minister offering vulgarities and curse words as she was escorted out of the building and off campus. Later in the evening, the Secret Service tweeted, the Secret Service was not involved in the termination process of Ms. Manigault Newman or the escort off the complex. Our only involvement in this matter was to deactivate the individual's pass, which grants access to the complex. She gave an exclusive interview this morning to Michael Strahan, a Good Morning America. She denies calling it absurd and ridiculous that she tried to enter the White House resident. Now, real quick, here's go to our panel. I don't give a damn. Now, I was just gonna do this as a headline and move on, but I need to say this. I don't give a damn. Here's the deal. Omarosa worked there, got it. A lot of people don't like her. A lot of people say she's controversial. This is stupid, okay? White House folks leave all the time. And so this whole deal like, oh, she tried to go here, she did this here. Right. I don't care. I mean, literally, when you look what black folks just did in Alabama turning out, when you look at the midterm elections, when you did all of this, you got all these folks sitting here, oh my God, all these memes. I don't care. She's gone. Fine. There you go. Have you know, go on. Do what you do. But all this back and forth and pettiness and cattiness is silly.
I agree with you, Roland. I mean, I'm glad you said it because I really don't care either. I mean, what difference does it make right. to the material condition of black people that Omarosa is inside the White House or outside the White House? It don't matter to me.
Well, go right ahead.
I was going to say, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter either. You know, and the unfortunate thing is, whether you like her or not, I don't want to see anybody lose their job. And so, you know, I have a little...
But if she resigned, she didn't lose her job.
Or was she forced out, you know? And I do have a soft spot for anybody who loses their job. But at the end of the day, man, whether she's in the White House or out, it ain't going to affect what happens tomorrow.
Whatever.
Today.
Scott,
right? Whatever. Let's keep it moving.
Do I have Scott, do I have 20 to seconds? Go.
Is this the 20 first seconds. Time that Scott doesn't want
to
talk?
I want to talk
Scott.
About black America. No,
no
listen.
No, Scott, you don't have to. Scott, you ain't got to give a comment because I can go to the commercial break.
Go to the commercial
break. So you missed
break.
Your shot.
I did.
Derek Holly, Julian, Scott Bolden, I appreciate it. Thanks a bunch. Coming up next,
thank
we
should
have put this in What the Hell. Coming up next, What the Hell Thursday, News 1 Now TV 1. All right, folks, tomorrow is the deadline for you to vote for the NAACP Image Awards. Go to NAACPImageAwards.net to cast your ballot. This is the first year the public can actually vote on the Image Awards. Don't forget, News One Now has been nominated in two categories, nominated for Best Show. So if you enjoy watching this show, only got one more week, please go online and cast your vote for us. Also, I've been nominated for Best Host. Of course, I won it in the first year, and so you can also vote for yours truly in the same category. Again, go online to NAACPImageAwards.net. Don't forget, the two-hour live show airs on January 15th, hosted by Anthony Anderson. All right, folks, What the Hell Thursday. This will be our last one before we go off the air, December 21st, in studio. Aruba Tommy, I know you got some crazy jacket. Let me see it. Let me see it. Oh, my God. Lord Jesus. We got Black and Bougie, Ashley Demi. Deja Perez, and also Deja Perez with WKYS 93.9, and Autumn Joy, host of the Autumn Joy Show, K97.5 in North Carolina. How we doing?
Hey!
All right, folks. Now, we all have that loud, crazy hood cousin who goes live on Facebook or Instagram way too much. Well, this is what happens when that cousin tries their hand at being a reporter. Oh, my God!
Turn it out the way. Hey, look, this is for y'all. I'm going live right here on the fire scene right here, the fire truck right behind me. We're live. We're going live. We on the scene of this. Oh, my camera won't turn. Attention, Wavy News. This is Rhoda Y'all reporting live. I'm reporting live. I'm a volunteer. Wavy TV 10 is not on the scene, but Rhoda Young is on the scene. Right now, we're off of Ruthin and another street off of Little Creek Road, Terminal Boulevard, with a house fire. The house fire is in full active duty right now. Oh, sorry. My bad. Sorry, I got caught, y'all. 532 is on fire. Let's get the house sprayed down with some water. Spray down with some water.
What the hell, Rhoda Young?
Okay, first of all, I just want to say this. Like, we live in an age where people pull their camera phones out before they actually call the police. Mm-hmm. And it looks like she was there pretty early. So, sis, why did you not call the cops?
Or the fire department.
Right. Like, you're right. Just reporting, having a good time.
No. She was trying to be a reporter. She was trying to be a reporter. She was trying to be a reporter.
It happened, let's record it.
Everybody pulled their phones out first.
Exactly.
Yes.
Don't check to see if there's any survivors in the house. Just, hey, let me put this on my Instagram and see if I can get some views.
Social media comes first.
And no, a big house like that, you know it's a cat and a dog.
No, I need to know. I need to know What the Hell Thursday. Why in the hell was David walking behind Aruba Tommy while we on live TV?
Oh.
Behind the scenes, Sinead.
He was fixing his jacket.
He was just behind the scenes.
He was fixing missing his jacket.
I'm gonna clutch my pearls.
Deja Perez, I'm still a homegirl with the reporter thing. I mean, that video had me hollering.
Yes, Lord.
Had me hollering. I don't understand. All right, we don't have much time. Let me just give y'all, forget the rest of the stories. And just, of course, let y'all say y'all final thoughts, but this being the final what the hell.
Well, I can...
Start with, we'll start with Bad and Bougie.
Bad and Bougie.
So I just want to say thank you, Roland. You have given us a platform, us budding journalists, a platform, Black Voices. We are just grateful for you, and I'm just really, really sad, but I do appreciate everything that you've done for us. I'm sorry. I'm just...
So bougie. Deja.
Me?
Yes. Yes, your damn name.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. I thought you were going to save me for last because, you know, you and I like to go toe-to-toe. But I just wanted to
say... Girl, will you come on?
Listen, Roland Martin, don't do it tonight. Do not do it today, okay? Mm-hmm. So I wanted to say thank you first and foremost for the opportunity. It has been an absolute pleasure to work with you, to meet a bunch of people in the same field, and I'm super thankful. Shush it, Roland. I'm trying to be nice to you on your last day, so thank you so much.
We have a countdown.
Goodbye, Roland Martin. I appreciate you, though. Thank you.
Autumn Joy, go.
Hey, really quick, I want to thank you, Roland. You've given me the best opportunities from the Image Awards red carpets last year to being a semi-regular host here on What the Hell Thursdays. I've got to meet so many people. Thank you so much for just everything that you've done. Opened up so many doors. Love you. Wishing us
hey,
the best.
Roland, I want to say you're a great person. I worked with you in Chicago when we met when we went to Chicago. But I also like to say Roland Martin is not homophobic.
No.
He is not. And this is my good friend. I love you, your wife. Thank you for the last 4 years.
Thank you.
You are the best.
Love you, Roland.
What the hell?
Reverse and regrow thinning hair and thin edges with the clinically proven Vitalize Hair Regrowth System. All natural and clinically proven to regrow your hair. Go to thinedges.com right now. Thinedges.com.